Sorry.
Hey, Kim's grandkids.
Sorry.
Borough manager, would you like to say a few words?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Mayor. So I appreciate everybody turning out for tonight's work session. So this is a summary kind of overview of our EDA disaster supplemental grant that we're pursuing, a $50 million grant opportunity. Over the last couple of years, we've garnered over 50 million bucks just in the last 2 years. This would be amplifying that, targeted towards some of the core economic drivers and components in our community that we've been working on. So Kate's done a phenomenal job. This was actually the same presentation that we delivered to our stakeholder group of nearly 40 people, everywhere from Senator Sullivan's office to Labor Commissioner to all the stakeholders we're currently working with, whether that be JAG Marine, Alaska Marine Lines, representation from pretty much all facets of each component that we're working on. And so I'll kick it to Kate to kind of go through, and I'll kind of prompt where necessary. But she did a fantastic job, and it was really neat to see the initial support for the grant. And I think we got a real home run opportunity in front of us. So Kate, take her away.
Awesome. Thanks, Mason. So speaking to the assembly and to those in the audience here, we put together this PowerPoint to give you an overview of the project components related to the EDA funding quest that we're working through right now. So I'll give a high-level introduction about the grant, the coalition, and some other features related to this project and effort. And then my colleague Amber Aldad will chime in on the three component projects once we get to that point in the presentation. I do just quickly want to recognize that this is an introductory piece. There's a lot of moving components to this grant development. So you've got the infrastructure and construction pieces and the three trees, and then you have the parts that are kind of driving the private sector investment of these projects. And then we also have synergetic, but not under this scope, other waterfront and port development projects that are taking place. So this is an overview of a piece. Next month in the February 10th assembly work session, we'll take a bit of a deeper dive into the findings of the preliminary engineering reports, which will be facilitated by Amber and I to the best of our ability as new information comes out. And then February 19th, the date has shifted to the 19th. We are hosting a community-wide town hall. Right now, we're working through the planning to bring in a panel of private investors that are coordinating with this project that will be able to speak to their piece of it, hopefully including our utility managers and providers here in the Southeast region. And then we'll have some breakout sessions where folks within the community can have little roundtable discussions about layers of these economic development opportunities, and then provide some formal survey feedback on, general consensus, any project components that may be missing. So there's layers. And so that's kind of the trajectory that we're on. And we wanted to do these little snippets along the way because there's just no way we can really feed everyone enough information in one town hall setting to set the stage. So again, a sequence of activities. So this isn't the first or the last time you'll be hearing from us on these projects. I also just wanted to highlight, and I'll share a little bit more at the end of the presentation here, other touch points that we'll be releasing to the public fact sheets on the partnerships, on the projects themselves, as well as some survey data that we'll be releasing through a third-party entity. Obviously, coming to the meetings is a great way to capture the detail, but we certainly want to provide other means and methods for folks to stay informed, because reading a 10-page or 20-page lease document isn't necessarily the most appropriate dinner table activity for some people at home. So we're working through those kinks and appreciate the public's patience and engagement on these projects. So going into the Industry Transformation Initiative, this is the EDA grant. The coalition is a requirement of the grant. So the entity that is the project lead is the city and borough as a formal entity, and then the staff providing project management and guidance throughout. then we've been working with private sector and industry partners to gauge what's needed at each site and if the amenities can fit the demand and what design criteria we need to consider in building out the deep water port, but also expansion of our waterfront. And the coalition has been formed to provide a coordinated disaster recovery, help accelerate industry and ensure long-term resilience. So again, just a high-level overview of the grant. No final design or approvals are being requested today at the assembly meeting. That will come much later in the process. And Mason, please do jump in at any point.
You bet. You have to go on.
So this effort is about transformation, not just a single project. EDA has three different tracks. They have implementation, a readiness project, and industry transformation. So readiness is just technical assistance. Implementation is one construction component or project. And industry transformation is a portfolio of 3 to 5 construction projects that will bring forward to the final grant submittal. And good to see you, Jim. Glad you're here. It's just a little redundant from our coalition meeting, so but it's good to get a second listen at it. So yes, disaster in 2023 is what made us eligible for this grant. EDA funded our water treatment plant project as well, not in full, but in part. And surely Kelly brought this forward and let us know that Wrangell was eligible for this grant last summer. And so we started coordinating at an internal level to build out a project scope and concept and reaching out to stakeholders. So that's kind of how this was born. And again, not final, but evolving in concept and strengthening as our project team moves forward.
And fun fact, EDA also helped fund our cold storage facility and our boat haul-out facility. So they've been a productive funding partner for quite some time.
Excellent. So this, again, just high level detail about the grant. It's a coalition-led portfolio of coordinated projects. They can be construction and non-construction components. Non-construction components might be things like workforce development projects, policy development and implementation at a local level, whether that's something like streamlined permitting for housing, things of that nature that may help enhance the overall resilience or economic impact of a project. For us, we're focusing on the 3 core component projects. And not only are they intended to transform our local economy, but have a broader influence at a regional and statewide level as well. And, you know, I think it's important to remember because of the disaster and the lives that were lost and the impacts that the community felt, this is an opportunity for us to, you know, have a legacy for that incident and really make something meaningful here. As it relates to the grant, you know, they really want to see energy infrastructure resilience. And so we're trying to identify ways where we can tie those components to that criteria. Wrangell fits this path specifically because of the scale of infrastructure needs and our private sector demands that are signaling broader improvements to equate to greater private investment, and then the regional and statewide importance as well. Some of you may already be aware of this, but we signed on to Southeast Conference Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy and approved by resolution that that's the guiding document for the borough as well. Of course, we have our 4 or 5 borough assembly goals: economic development, infrastructure and maintenance, quality of life, and education and communication.
Nailed it.
So
the other thing I think on this slide, the most important piece is the coalition-led portfolio. And really, that kind of the analogy I use is it's not like the community and all of us are going to the grocery store at Bob's and deciding what we're going to make for dinner. We generally have a good idea what we're making for dinner, but we want to refine it. So we're picking up the ingredients for the entree, so to speak, right? So we have 3 different components, and we want to use this coalition to refine each of these components to make the biggest compelling pitch we can to EDA to secure the funds. So that's how I would describe it, is getting community comment, and feedback. This isn't something that we're rolling with it and thank you very much and we're going to just speak at you. It's a very collaborative effort with the coalition, and we spent, you know, thousands of hours collectively with each of these stakeholder groups, and now we'll do a lot of robust public engagement in the coming weeks.
And actually, during the open house ceremonies of the new water treatment plant is where I first learned about the EDA grant. And I think it was Shirley,
yes,
her first name or last name. Anyway, she said it looks like it was almost written for Wrangell because of all the projects we already had in the hopper.
That's a good point, Patty. A lot of the projects that are on our list, or all three of them really, have been identified through longstanding capital improvement priority lists, either at the state and federal level. And so, again, these projects weren't manifested out of nothing. It's not a shot in the dark. It's, you know, built upon longstanding priorities of the borough and redevelopment of this mill site. So the EDA looks at five different priorities for investing their funds and dollars into local communities, economic recovery and resilience. So not only do we cover that basis with the effects of the landslide, but we all know economically we've been depressed as a region since the fall of the timber industry in the late 90s. And, you know, folks have been scrambling, and a lot of communities have really relied heavily on tourism, and we're trying to build out a diverse portfolio and ensure that we have multiple legs of industry that we can lean on in case there is another major incident or fallout. That diversity is really, really critical. So industry creation and acceleration, job creation and retention, private sector investment leverage, and long-term impact beyond the grant period. So those are the five criteria in which EDA evaluates a successful project. So of course, we all know and live the landslide. We don't need to go over that in great detail, but I do think this is an opportunity for us to honor those lives that were lost and really do something meaningful with the funding that's available to us. Beyond Wrangell, obviously we know loss of life and lasting community trauma, but there was a series of natural disasters throughout the region on POW, Ketchikan, Haines, and Sitka, and even some recent concerns in Juneau. And so the compounding effects from a series of natural disasters are felt here in Wrangell, but that's happening across Southeast. Damage to critical infrastructure, population reduction driven by out-migration, declines in housing values following repeated disasters, and then the ripple effect. It hits workforce with displacement after the event, but also due to a loss of population, housing instability, freight and supply chain disruptions, and emergency response capacity was at maximum. So, you know, utility reliability is another component that was felt through this disaster and others within the region. So Wrangell is, you know, it's a victim just like anybody else in Southeast. Long-term population decline and volatility, the death over birth rate is really driving that factor. And there's not a lot attracting people to the region outside of our general quality of life. Workforce contraction is definitely hit by that population loss, increased reliance on imported goods, not only in Southeast, but across the state, limited housing supply, constraining workforce recovery. That's one of the biggest challenges with staffing and attracting new residents to town is availability of housing. Infrastructure and utility constraints are suppressing private investment. So as an example, water and sewer doesn't extend to the deep water port. So that's an element of the project component that we'll go over. And then there are necessary upgrades to the utility and energy grid system to be able to occupy that site at the capacity that's being proposed. So there's work to be done on those levels. And then these conditions directly affect local employers. Obviously, taking care of our own and the people who are already present here is a priority. as well as our schools and just our general ability to maintain long-term service capacity. Mason, is there anything you would add to that?
No, I think that the bottom bullet points on that ultimately lead to the very top one, a long-term population decline and volatility. I think we got a tourniquet on it this last couple of years, but really working through this grant to go the other direction. And from a workforce development perspective, you know, working with stakeholders like Avtech throughout this grant to develop those workforce pipelines, along with JAG Marine Group, who's developed new programming across the region. You know, so we can speak to each thing along this bullet point, but ultimately we want to go the other way with population. It wasn't all that long ago. I think it was 2010, we were at 2,400 people. In the 1980s, we were about 2,700. So we've scaled up before, we've scaled down certainly, and we want to get back to what we were.
So just touching on the statewide economic context, job and wage growth alongside population decline. So opportunities there for new and expanded positions, but also wages are striving to catch up with the rate of inflation. But we need more people to fill those critical positions. And housing is a primary economic constraint across Alaska, and Wrangell's seeing that soften here, thanks to some of the local investment, but also new residential development that's taking place. I think the last time we counted, there was 13 new residential homes being constructed on the island. And it's looking like there's gonna be a dozen more or so in the upcoming year. And then the strategic importance of ports, freight, and utilities in Southeast can't be stressed enough. Ports are our lifeline to all sorts of things, transportation, goods, quality of life, and multiple industries. Can't say we're not connected to our ports in some form or fashion. So we need to take good care of them here. And there's not a lot of tax base to be able to do that. So we have to get strategic and seek out grant funds such as this to be able to support those efforts. And then of course, again, like I said, regional maritime and transportation systems are critical to Southeast and Wrangell. So we're going to go through the coordinated component projects at a high level here, and I will default to my colleague Amber as we dig into this a little bit more. But the portfolio includes three coordinated component projects: the waterfront expansion, which includes expanding the Marine Service Center fill area from the old mill dock going north. It also includes some dock modifications to City Dock, adding a floating component, allowing for more ships to tie up easily to City Dock. There's a number of vessels that have to anchor offshore and lighter their passengers in for shore-based excursions, as well as transport through town. So that's a big piece for us. And just for folks' knowledge, if you weren't aware already, there is a different rate or fee collected from vessels that tie up to City Dock versus those that anchor offshore. So not only do we capture greater revenue for those that tie up to City Dock, it's a better experience for those aboard the ship, more passengers disembark, and that adds to our capacity as well. In the bottom right corner, it is not a component of the EDA grant, but it is relevant to the waterfront development project in full, is the ACL dock. And just so folks are aware, I know there's been a lot of questions from my office and through the port director and assuming other divisions as well, but that vision right there, drawing, it's a concept. It is not drawn to scale. That dock is smaller than City Dock and would accommodate smaller vessels than City Dock. So it's a little bit misleading in that way. I wish we would have put a disclaimer on there about the size and scale, but certainly will be smaller. And again, we're working through the design with ACL, who's really driving that, and all components of their project will be reviewed and vetted by borough staff. So that's not the final, but just wanted to address that. Again, not included in the EDA grant, that's funded by ACL, not the borough. Our piece in the ACL project is just providing for the fill on the upland side of the dock infrastructure.
I have a few more comments I'll make when we get to the better pictures on that specific.
Excellent. And then the deep water port redevelopment. So that is subdivision planning, water and sewer extension, and utility upgrades, as well as subdivision planning to include thoroughfares, right-of-ways, easements, etc., and then reinforcement of the bulkhead along the waterfront. And then the reservoir flume replacement is a part of our water and utility resiliency plan. So that is improving infrastructure to expand our catchment capacity and ensure that our aging infrastructure is updated with modern parts, pieces, and design. So these projects were selected because they remove a number of bottlenecks. They don't operate in silos. While each of them could, the success and overall economic impact really is driven by all of these things coming together at one time. Amber, I'm going to cue you up here to talk a little bit more in detail about the waterfront, if you'd like to add a few things here for the public.
Yeah, thank you, Kate. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Excellent. Thanks for allowing me to just walk the folks through a little bit more detail of the three projects that we have. So with the slide that I see on my screen, it's the what we're calling the Downtown Port Expansion Project. It's one of the three component projects that we'll submit to EDA. So what you see here is an expansion to City Dock as one of the two components of this component project. This project will include removing a mooring dolphin and a breasting dolphin on the north end of City Dock, as well as the existing catwalk that you see in that square. That area will be cleared to allow for a new float to be installed. And then beyond that, a new catwalk and a mooring dolphin on the north end of that new float. The purpose of this is to allow those European style ships that are coming into Wrangell. I don't work with them in full detail, but I understand a lot of them aren't able to connect their disembarkment location of their ship at our city dock during differential tidal changes, just based on elevation and coordination between the vessel and the city dock. So having this float, which is accessed through all tide levels, will allow those ships. I think there are five that Cruise Line Agencies of America has shared with us that come into Wrangell, that either do or could call into Wrangell, five different sizes that would be able to moor up to that float. So that's the one component there. It will include extending water, potable water service to that float. So those cruise ships could take water if we have it to give to them. It will also include extending the electrical distribution service to that float for site lights and other power needs. The second component of this project is expanding the Marine Service Center. It's the full Marine Service Center can't be seen on this drawing, but I think you all know kind of where it ends there, similar to the backside of Nolan Center. So part of this project would be expanding the fill portion of that area in front of City Hall to allow for about a 1 to 1.5 acre Marine Service Center yard expansion. It would include extending the potable water and electric services, as well as storm drain and oil and water separation collection to accommodate that environmental concern. So that is, in brief, the details of this project to support our ever-changing tourism needs in downtown, as well as our marine vessel service industry.
Additions for you, Kate, and on the city dock expansion, the floating component specifically. Obviously, this is a concept here. We have other developed concepts. We're working with Cruise Line Agencies and P&D to kind of refine. Steve's taken a really great active role in that. But one of the other things that comes with it, besides resiliency, there's a lot of ships that can tie up to city dock as is, but it's not very comfortable. I think we can all remember the summer day where the Ruby tied up this year, and there was a gangway shift, and then we had a flood of I don't know, 500 people right dead by the stickine, and that was kind of a nightmare. So this would allow for a gradual trickle of those gangway shifts wouldn't occur in that manner. There's also an additional market we would capture, like the Roald Amundsen, for example, is one of those ships that can't tie up the city dock just due to gangway alignment issues. They have to lighter in. So we can capture greater revenue off of ships that either don't come to Wrangell or do come and have to lighter in. And then also we're exploring alternatives on the floating dock component on the inside. Just juxtapose that to the stickine in there, right where that vessel is, just north of that, where you could tie up on the inside of that floating dock component as well. So there's a little bit more to the story than maybe just a floating component. In terms of the Marine Service Center, so the EDA grant is clearly scoped to fund that portion of fill. We do plan to fill as part of our waterfront fill project, starting at the barge abutment all the way across to the mill dock abutment. And so that's something we do plan. The preliminary concept that the paper got a hold of and threw out there kind of shows like a bulbed out structure. That'd be like, worst case scenario, that's all we have money for type of thing. But we do have a plan, and it's been the plan since 1998, where we've had finalized. This is the ninth modification of our core permit. So we've wanted to do this for quite some time. So it'll just be a straight line fill all the way across the board. And whether EDA funds a portion of it or we use our bond proceeds, we will fill all the way across. And I'll leave some more comments on the ACL's stuff in my manager's report tonight. But again, not drawn to scale. There could be complete design shifts where the floating dock's actually parallel with the shoreline. I mean, it's certainly not going to be developed in a way that would impede city dock navigation or inner harbor and Marine Service Center navigation. So I know that there was reference to the fuel barge. Certainly, we're not going to impede ourselves there. So a lot more work. I appreciate the community's comments on it. They're very valid, and we're aware. So. Go ahead on to the next one.
Great. The only other thing I would add to this, which folks can expect at the town hall and the community engagement, is you're looking at three different components of a waterfront development project portfolio. And what is missing is what may happen here in the barge yard if we are able to relocate existing freight facilities out to the 6 mile facility. And we will have Chris Myrtle, who did our original sketch and design concepts for the waterfront master plan, mock something up for us so that we can see how all of these things are going to flow together. We'll really have a good design portfolio and visual representation of the mill property, but we want to bridge that gap between what's presented here and what may come in secondary phases, building out that kind of retail green space, walking path corridor between the city dot cul-de-sac and the Marine Service Center expansion fill that's presented here. So definitely layers to this project and phases over time.
I think really what we're trying to achieve in an iteration of the waterfront master plan is a balanced waterfront, everything from commercial to industrial activity. And I know that the Port of Everett does a good job with achieving that balanced waterfront concept. So originally the waterfront master plan is really a park, and a park doesn't pay the bills for the community. So I think we're trying to find that balance of driving economic development, but also creating space for the community to enjoy.
Right. So this visual here, and I'll cue up Amber as well for this one, but this provides an overview of what may appear to be the site occupancy. There's been an updated drawing since this presentation was put together, but generally this gives you the overall layout. So Amber, go forward, please, if you will, with the explanation here.
I will go forward. Thank you, Kate. So as Kate said, this is our kind of preliminary outline for what we think this site could look like based on continued discussions with future occupants at this site. It includes up in the upper left-hand corner of the site, you'll see it says generator and data center. Again, this has been revised a little bit now with some additional conversations with GreenSpark and their data center ideas. Also further developed with discussions with AML for their barge ramp that they're talking about building out here. and the amount of land that they need and what that would look like. And then, of course, reserving the balance of the majority of the rest of the site for the JAG Marine Group for a future Wrangell shipyard. That, of course, in conjunction with the blue area, which is also reserved for Tideline Construction that Kate is working on with them for property purchase. So we're really focusing on the data center, the backup generator site, the AML freight yard, and the JAG barge ramp. And what this project will do is, in essence, it is developing an industrial subdivision and providing the site utilities that the future occupants will need for their operations. So we are not developing their operations, only developing our site to accommodate them, allow them to come in, have the land and the utilities that they need for their new business ventures. So I wish that we did have the new site plan pulled up. Kate, is there an opportunity for me to share that?
I think you can share your screen, or I don't know.
We'll try it.
We'll just pause here, Amber, and Mason's going to chime in. I'll see if I can pull it up.
Yeah, I'll show the guests for just a sec. So with respect to the data center and some of these other stakeholders, so there's a lot of work happening on our side, certainly, but there's a lot of work happening on their side, too. So AML, per the terms of our MOU, has been working on preliminary design and permitting for a cargo transfer facility out there. And so they have already worked through P&D, various levels of design. So we actually have some designs in my office on what that would look like. So they're doing that. They're paying for that work to be performed. It's well on its way. On the GreenSpark and the backup generation thing, I think we kind of missed that piece a little bit. That area in yellow up there would also be that existing shipping and receiving center that serviced the old mill property. Would be a backup generation powerhouse. So there's a couple 3516s. Cat diesel generators on the American Cruise Line Empress that's out at the mill property, and we're looking to acquire a couple of those. I mean, I'm going to get some direction from the assembly tonight on those, actually. That would back up not only the site, the data center itself, but also the other industrial users at the site, and it could back up feeder 4, thus increasing our backup generation potential for the whole town of Wrangell, which is great. A little bit of light myth busting on the data center, just because I've got a lot of phone calls and comments on it. This isn't a 500 megawatt Amazon Web Services or Google, Microsoft 500 megawatt data center. This is a 2 megawatt data center maximum. I've got a lot of questions on power consumption and water consumption, namely. The max water consumption would be 35 gallons per minute. They do have a closed loop cooling system. They have a tank of about 300 gallons that cools this thing. It's a very limited consumption in terms of water. From a power perspective, I could speak for an hour on how it's a beneficial thing for the community to wrangle, and we could see ratepayer decreases out of the increased volume in sales to them. But I'll reserve that for a different time, perhaps the town hall. But just a bit of light, I think that the scale that people are looking at in the news for 500 megawatt data centers compared to a 2 megawatt is very, very different. And I'm happy to have conversations with folks to explain how.
Amber, is that the correct image that you would want displayed?
Yeah, that's the one. Thanks, Kate. Yeah, so a little bit more. Mason just described that power generation side at the top. With further development, we've got a separate parcel for GreenSpark. And then again, just some revised yard space for AML, allowing a little bit more in interior space for the JAG shipyard. You will see here there's a barge haul out that they've put in and a synchro lift down on the JAG waterfront face. That again would not be a part of our project. We just are showing some various components that our project will support, as well as the AML barge terminal that you see on the water northwest side. But in essence, so this project is again subdivision development, which will include, you know, all the necessary subdivision and platting, a survey, of course, to go along with that, and then really just construction of the roads and all of the utilities necessary to support those operations, which we have reviewed with each of those occupants. It will include, because our water and sewer terminates at the last home on the uphill side, just at their southern their more northern side of their house. It will include extending water and sewer services from their along the highway and doing some directional drilling to get to our site. We're focused now on having the primary entrance into the site through the 30-foot easement that we have currently. Kind of hard to describe there. Can you pull that other? Yeah, there you go. So you can see that development there with the utilities coming through. Kate's got her cursor on it. And allowing for 60-foot right-of-way for, you know, AML traffic and JAG equipment coming and going through the site. Beyond that, if you'll scroll down, Kate, to the waterfront, this project also will include removing the bulkhead car rails that are used as a bulkhead protection across the entire site of that waterfront face. There is an opportunity if the JAG deal goes through that we could eliminate a portion of that because JAG will be doing something different with their waterfront face. But until that is a done deal, we want to make sure that we have at least the minimal improvements that we could get from this EDA funding to improve that waterfront face, which would include, again, removing the existing bulkhead and then just basically developing a armor rock slope that provides protection, erosion protection against wave action and surge. That is the project there. I don't know if anybody has any questions, but.
Is there any questions on that one?
Okay. I think we're all good to move forward. Well, you might speak to that one, Kate. That was the AML design for their.
So that just gives it a bit more detailed overview of the bathymetry, so kind of the ocean floor and what the elevations look like in that area, and then what would be the marine infrastructure for Alaska Marine Line. So in my introduction, I talked about the layers to this effort here. You've got the project portfolio that the borough is seeking funds for, which is all the utility infrastructure and site preparedness for the private sector industry to come in and then build what it is that they want. And EDA really evaluates project success and funding on what does your investment equate to in private dollars. So if we extend our water and sewer, if we build out the subdivision, that equates to X dollar investment from Alaska Marine Lines or JAG Marine Group. So I think it's really important to stress that these partnerships are critical and they are evolving, and there are elements of design that have not yet been drawn out in full concept yet that will really be the obligation of the private sector industry to realize, and they will have to review and consult with the borough and ensure that we have an opportunity to weigh in on just placement and location and general scope. Obviously, they're the experts in marine infrastructure for shipyard fabrication and construction. And so we're relying on them, but it's good for us to understand what's going on. And between Amber, Steve, David McCollin, Tom Wader, I mean, they have spent dozens and dozens of hours talking to the engineers, having independent meetings with each of these private sector parties, because we want to make sure that one occupant is complementary to another, and that we're not short-sighting ourselves and, you know, relying on one more than the other, or one precludes the other from happening. So everyone has gotten a chance to review this concept and work with Amber and the project team to refine it and make sure that it meets everybody's needs. And, you know, we could put all our eggs in one basket for one private sector partner over another, but the reality is, diversity is the spice of life here as it relates to our infrastructure projects. And that's how we've been focusing our rapport and relationship building with each of these partners. Moving on to our final and third project component, which, you know, again, may not be the sexiest thing in the world, but water is the spice and core of all of our existence. We cannot do anything without water. And this, believe it or not, folks, is a part of our existing water infrastructure. So I'm going to kick it over to you, Amber. And Tom is here in the audience. If Tom, you'd like to comment on the project as well.
Yeah, thanks. Spice in these projects.
Okay, I'm just going with it.
Tom, feel free to jump in if you want to add anything, but this project we're calling our flume replacement. It is replacing approximately 250 feet of the existing flume, which is primarily this open culvert that you see here. Originally, I think there was some wood stave included as part of the open top, but I'm not sure if any of that's left. Tom could comment on that, but in essence, we've got cribbing. Kate, do you have the other photo of the failed?
I don't, not on this slide, but I can pull it up somewhere.
If you can, just to give folks an idea of what we're dealing with, but you know, this culvert was built on wood cribbing. A lot of that cribbing has deteriorated and fallen, causing the culverts to kind of become disjointed. And of course, we're now not able to capture all the water that we need. It is projected that we capture, we're losing about 15% of the water that we could be collecting into the upper reservoir based on the deficiencies in this. So it's been a project that's been on our list for many years. You've probably heard us talk about from the flume to the tap, and it starts here. It is the most uppermost part of our raw water system, which delivers critical water, especially during times of drought, and keeps our reservoirs full. So this project, again, would replace the flume. It is in a semi-remote location in the watershed above the upper reservoir. There's an old access road that traverses around the perimeter of the upper reservoir that's overgrown. It's really not in the capacity it needs to be to get equipment back there adequately. So this project will also see the improvement of that road around the upper reservoir so that that flume can be accessed not only for the construction of this project, but for long-term maintenance as well. And Kate, over the last couple of days, we've gotten a design drawing concept. I don't know if I can share my screen, but if folks were interested and you could figure that out, I could give them a visual.
Yeah, I'm trying to sort that out right now, Amber, because we're on a webinar piece. Kim has the authority over the projection here.
Well, they're figuring that out, and another, just very simply put, this is redirecting water off our watershed that would not hit the upper reservoir. And so, you know, 15% to me seems a little bit light. I bet it's a lot more than that personally. I mean, I know that Tom and I have taken several hikes up to the flume, and really it's this makeshift instrument that, you know, the guys from back in the 60s put together, and it's not effectively capturing water. And so water being a scarce resource to the community, especially integral to industrial users, such as tribal seafoods and for fish processors, certainly would be integral to some of the mill property stakeholders if those expansions move forward. And so this is an easy one, and I think it closely ties to all the economic development that's underlying. So some people are like, what the hell's a flume, you know? So it's nice just to put it in simple terms.
Yeah, great. I see you've got those drawings. So if you will go to page...
I got it up, Amber. It's the drawing in the center of the screen right now.
Yeah, so page 6 will show the road. You get a sense of kind of where the project starts at the entrance of the upper reservoir and then routes around the backside. Yeah, there you go. That one right there.
Just a little bit more. There you go.
There you go. So the road starts on the left-hand side, heads up around the upper reservoir, and then you can see the section to the furthest right of that drawing contains that 250-foot flume. So for a little bit more detail on what we're looking at for an improved flume, if you'll go to page, I think it's 3 above that. 3, a couple pages above.
Oh, right.
right-hand side at the top. So we're looking at about a 3 foot wide by 2.5 foot high concrete flume. It would be supported as necessary with a leveling pad and 250 foot of that. The very last page, if you want to scroll down to the very last page of this set of drawings, you'll see that 250 foot and what that the elevation of that flume structure would look like. There you go. So there's a lot of work in the road. We Tom and I met with the engineers last week and reviewed some potential changes to bring the scope of the work down. We think that it can be a pioneered road, save for what may be needed for getting a concrete truck around there. But we're also looking at the potential of hand mixing the concrete up there too, if there is some cost savings that could be realized in you know, some value engineering. So we're looking at that. We'll further develop that project and have that ready to go with our preliminary engineering report and the associated budget that is with that final concept.
Hey, Amber, Tom's got some things to add on this one.
Sure.
Great. Yeah, thanks, Amber. That was a great review. I just wanted to add in a few extra things here. You know, we have a lot of work to do with regards to our water infrastructure. We spent $24 million last year on our new water treatment plant. We still have a lot of dam work to do and, you know, water mains and things like that. The flume is one that has been on our project list for a while here, and this will, you know, capture additional water to increase our resiliency, especially in the summertime and supporting our local industries and things like that. And after a couple of meetings here this week, Amber and I were able to, you know, knock almost a third of the project cost down after meeting with the engineers. If anybody was paying attention to the fine detail there on some of those drawings, things were a little bit overbuilt initially that we're trying to scale back with what will be useful for us long-term. You know, historically, we drive a four-wheeler as far back there as we can get in the summertime, and then we have to pack tools and materials and supplies by hand to get back there. And so it's a very difficult thing for us to maintain as is. And the last thing I'd say is we're ultimately our goal here is to get a long-lasting solution. You know, timber frame, wood crib, things like that. In the back 40, no sunlight, wet all the time. It's going to last, you know, 15 years or so. We're looking to get a concrete solution that's hopefully going to last, you know, double or triple that. And so that's what we're going for.
Thanks, Tom.
Hey.
Great. So I'm going to try to pace us through these last slides in a reasonable time, just to give a few minutes here at the end. I know there are folks who probably have lots of questions, some answered, some unanswered, and some new ones from this presentation. So again, I've got my business card here. You can email me follow-up questions or to the borough clerk at clerk@wrangell.com. We'll compile all of those questions and work through some fact sheets, but also aim to bring that context and information to the town hall so that we're answering questions as they come up and addressing these things so that the right messaging is out there. But project impact over time in the short term, it would create construction employment, infrastructure stabilization, improve freight reliability, and provide for immediate utility resilience. In the midterm, so looking out 3 to 7 years, expanded maritime and transportation activity, workforce development and retention, waterfront expansion supporting tourism and recreation economies, and housing expansion tied to employment growth. And long-term, reduced freight dependency and cost volatility, regional maritime hub functions, large-scale shipyard with regional influence, same job creation and industry diversification, and then stronger population retention and hopefully moving from retention into growth. So I've talked through the private sector engagement pieces. We've been evolving in our memorandum of understanding, working through some early lease discussions. As folks know, there's been lease applications submitted. Those go before Economic Development and Planning Commission, and they provide an advisory recommendation to the borough manager that informs negotiations and supports assembly decision once those negotiations are reached. And then we're also working through some capital investment interests, and as a component of the EDA, those private sector parties have to write a commitment letter detailing what their investment is going to be so that they have some teeth in the game. Obviously, project scope, sequencing, and priorities have been informed by industry partners and bringing those details to the community and the sequence of public engagement. But nothing is final, nor are we seeking approvals at this time. But prior to grant submittal, we will review this with the assembly and seek authorization for that package and funding to support the match.
That'll be on February 24th.
And the grant is due March 6th?
March 3rd.
3rd.
Yeah. Folks have seen this timeline, but this kind of just goes through a historical timeline of public engagement related to the mill property and waterfront, and we're increasing that here now. So community opinion surveys, comprehensive planning, master planning, mill property acquisition and subsequent town hall, grant funding and acquisition in 23, and then further community survey and stakeholder engagement in 24. And then, of course, barge ramp decommissioning, property clearing, and private partner solicitation agreements and lease applications in 25. And the story continues as we make way into 2026. I think I've pretty much tackled that piece. I did want to highlight the coalition structure. Mason touched on it earlier. So we have internal departments, private sector. We also have Wrangell Public Schools present. AvTech, new director Corey Ortiz came online and he jumped on the call. The commissioner of the Department of Labor to help expand workforce development opportunities. We also have members from our community action group. And I had a great meeting with the chamber director last week. So weaving more and more partners into the mix. And then our economist, Milani Shivens, who does work throughout the region and state, as well as data partners, public engagement consultant, grant development team, other state agencies, including ADA, who is very interested in the shipyard project once the design is construction ready. They may come in and be interested in funding, but they don't really provide advisory or cursory review of projects until they're finalized, but they've been engaged. And then we have our regional economic accelerator Southeast Conference present, as well as Alaska Municipal League, and then the transportation and freight company. We also brought in our IBEW union leader, Sven Westergaard. He's been great. He was a great supporter of the RAISE grant, of course, through industry expansion, utility expansion, that will impact our union labor pool, and want to make sure that they're well supported and informed, and then some tourism stakeholders as well. And our first kickoff meeting, we probably had 40 people present. So that's the core coalition. And then obviously the assembly is an extension of that coalition. And of course, the coalition aims to serve the public. So we're here sharing about all of those components as well.
That's probably a good place, okay?
Yeah, I think that's good.
Will you go back to the coalition list just real quick? I would also mention there's a lot of unsung heroes on the list that don't make it. SEPA is a great example, right? SEPA is committed to reinstating the transformer that used to be at the switchyard to power up the mill site for large-scale industrial development. That's something that's not on here. They're not a poor investor in this, but they are to be mentioned. And I think that I really just want to thank Kate and Amber, who've done the lion's share of the work to this point, as well as Tom, David, and Steve, who've spent countless hours scoping these projects and providing expertise. This is just like the tippy top of the iceberg. I mean, each of these concepts we've kind of reviewed tonight, there's probably about 20 of each of them on top of all the normal jobs and capital projects and economic development measures we're working on. But it's a really, really exciting time, and it couldn't be a more fitting name, a transformation pathway, because this really is the turn of Wrangell if we pull it off. I mean, picture it, you know, a Wrangell where you have another 150 jobs. I mean, Jag Marine just put another 100 jobs into Ketchikan in 2026. This facility, 150 jobs, you get a home port of a polar security cutter, there's another 150 plus families. That's just JAG alone and the Coast Guard investment that could come out of this. Not to mention you have your freight arriving 100 million pounds of steel right to the mill property destination where fabrication activities are occurring. Yeah, scrap metal outfit that's taking all that stuff out of it. It's a beautiful concept. Can't work any better. But we're really hitting all the marks across the board. And none of this is fairy dust. A lot of this is taking a lot of hard work. We've solicited each of these folks to the table just because we want these productive partners to work with. It hasn't just fell on our lap. So we've been very targeted in our approach and calculated in what we're doing. So that's in large part an effort due to the directors and Kate and Amber's work. So thank you very much for all the hard effort.
And you're in daily contact with most of these entities.
Absolutely. I mean, JAG, for example, I bet I've talked to them every single day, including weekends for the last 8 weeks. I mean, this is a home run for Wrangell to pull it off.
And there's a coordinated lobbying effort with our federal delegation.
Correct.
So going forward, future activities, we'll have a project webpage up. We'll have individual fact sheets for each project component. Fact sheets on kind of the profile and impact of each private investor that specifically is going to be a site occupant of either the waterfront or the deep water port. And then February 10th, we'll go into a project presentation and preliminary engineering reports are going to give you a design concept, the general construction schedule, cost estimates, and a little bit more detail on the scope and scale of the projects. So there will be more content to present at that meeting. And then February 19th, public engagement activities. And at some point throughout this, we'll do a public survey that likely is going to overlap with the public engagement activities. So we make sure that we're pulsing the community in a survey forum once, you know, all the information and facts and details are presented. And then at any time, you can reach out to the borough clerk at wrangell.com or me at kthomaswrangell.com if you have questions that you think should be woven into subsequent community engagement or questions that haven't been answered or thoughts and considerations that you want us to keep in mind. There's certainly been some good feedback already. Some things we're already thinking about, some things we have solutions for. And some things we're still working out those details. So happy to take any questions from the Borough Assembly at this point. And
you'd like the questions from the community before February 10th, or as soon as possible?
Yeah, at any point they can come in. It's nice to have, generally, I feel like our team is agile and informed and intellectual enough to be able to answer those questions on the spot. But if people can ask questions in advance, it will help us refine those fact sheets and the presentation. Because if one person has the question, it's probably coming from a common place of questions.
Rainbow Community Group.
Yes.
I would like to invite people too. I've had office hours on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 4 to 5 every week for the last 4 months. And some people take advantage of those. That's been a really helpful way to get word out. So if you want to sign up, Megan Powell, I'll hook you up on my calendar. And I found that to be a good place for discussions too. So
we're at early stages, but we're moving along. And
we didn't say we're at early stages. I think we're well on our way.
That concludes my component of the presentation. I don't know if there's anything else.
Any questions, Assembly?
One quick question. So we've talked about expansion of our existing infrastructure. If this comes in at $25 million and it's a $50 million opportunity, can we use any of the extra money left over to rehab existing water and sewer infrastructure needs?
No. Typically, you're going to ask for the scope and funding as it's prescribed in your preliminary engineering reports, and you may modify scope once the grant's been awarded, but you're not seeking to reallocate funding that wasn't prioritized initially.
The other piece I would add to that, some member of the board, is that we're fighting to get the number to 50 already. So it's been far in excess, 14 million over 50. So we won't have to worry about it.
All right. I'm going to close the workshop And Assembly, are you okay if we roll right into a, you need a 2 minute break?
Did you stop sharing? Yeah, you did. Memories start calling.